Hey everyone, welcome to episode 5 of Building a Financial Fortress. This week, I'll do a market week in review. I'll talk about the latest in Bitcoin, and that will kind of lead into a discussion about the self-custody of Bitcoin, how that all works, sort of how I've done it. And there's been a lot of discussion about that with the events of this week in Canada, which we'll talk about. Starting with the market review, this came in from Wall Street Breakfast. I get an email. Stocks closed lower on Friday to wrap up a second week of losses while bonds rallied. Investors sought safety from the tensions of Russia and Ukraine ahead of the long President's Day weekend. U.S. officials warn they expect a Russian attack in the next few days, although the Russian foreign minister agreed to meet with the U.S. Secretary of State next week. And war worries outweighed news that otherwise might have lifted investor spirits, including an increase in sales of previously owned homes last month, and comments from key Federal Reserve officials suggesting that the central bank might raise interest rates by a quarter point rather than a half point. For the week, the S&P 500 fell 1.6%, NASDAQ down 1.8%, and the Dow Jones down 1.9%. Another market news, we saw the 13F season. These are filings that hedge funds are required to, that if they have at least 100 million in assets, they have to disclose their holdings. Sometimes, a lot of times, I'm sure they're actually out of the position by the time you read about it. But so that's a lot of investors like to follow those to see what they're buying and what they're selling. Probably most notably was Warren Buffett, who bought a large stake in Activision Blizzard when it was pretty beaten down right before Microsoft announced the acquisition of it. So that was a good bet. Inflation readings came in. So last week we talked about the consumer price index, but this week we have the producer price index, which came in at 9.7%. U.S. wholesale prices up 9.7% from a year ago, which is more than twice the analyst estimates, and just short of the largest jump on record, which we saw in May of 2021. So that was not good news. Retail sales were also up a lot, which surprised people, but that could be a reaction to inflation with people not wanting to delay purchases. In other news, certainly seems like the pandemic is fading. There's, a lot of the stocks that did well during the pandemic, like Shopify, Etsy, eBay, Wayfair, Chewy, Roblox, all tumbling much worse than some of the larger FANG stocks. And we're also seeing lifting of restrictions. Probably the biggest news on that front was State of California has updated their plan. They're not calling it a pandemic, they're calling it endemic now. And so their focus is on let's see, monitoring data, frontline conditions to ensure the state is ready to respond to new and emerging variants and changing conditions. It stresses maintaining wastewater surveillance systems and sequencing at least 10% of positive COVID-19 test specimens to see how the virus changes. Also strongly recommends masking in public settings, but doesn't require it. Does not provide specific metrics that would trigger the implementation of mitigation measures like mask wearing, of course. I don't know. It's a lot of words, but at least we don't have to wear masks at work anymore, so that's a good thing. But we're starting to see that, all over the country, as the cases drop, hospitalizations drop. Obviously, the Russia-Ukraine news was big news, and will continue to weigh on the markets. Probably a reason why gold has recently reached about $1,900 an ounce, which is the highest it's been for a while. Also, oil has been up pretty high too recently, although it has fallen back a bit. Then some news on housing came out. 30-year fixed mortgage rate is up almost 4%, 3.92% last week. It's about 1% higher than it was a year ago. That's really going to start to affect affordability if interest rates continue to rise like that. Although there is low inventory in most places, elevated prices, and I don't know, I have a feed from Redfin that I follow, and just about every house that sells is selling for more than the asking price. So not always a lot, but pretty consistently over the asking price. So there's definitely a FOMO going on with buyers, and it just feels bubbly in the housing market. And then also, I guess mortgage applications to purchase a home also saw a decline of about 5% last week. So, and then refinancing applications plummeted to the lowest level since July of 2019. So, obviously, not a good time to refinance. So that's the overview of the markets. Moving on to Bitcoin, the hash rate, or the really the amount of computing power that's in the Bitcoin network, hit an all-time high last week, which means that the miners who are responsible for securing the system are healthy. This is an article from the Decrypt. It said Bitcoin's hash rate recorded its biggest increase of the year on Saturday, jumping from 188.4 exahashes per second to an all-time high of 248.11 exahashes a second in just one day. But despite the drop, to 209.63 on Sunday, the world's leading blockchain network is now as secure as ever. In blockchains that use proof of work consensus algorithm, hash rate refers to the total combined computational power allocated by a network of computers called miners to process transactions and add blocks onto the blockchain. The higher the hash rate, the more secure the network, as more computing power is required to perform a successful attack, like process fraudulent transactions or report that the same Bitcoin has been used twice, which is called a double spend. So that's good news. Then probably the biggest news from this week was what was going on in Canada. So the government, the Prime Minister, invoked an emergency order, and which allowed them to basically go after anyone who is responsible for fundraising for the truckers that are protesting, that are now parked in the Capitol. And this involved basically seizing, freezing, locking down their your financial accounts. So if you're one of the folks who donated, your accounts get locked basically, and you can't use your bank account, credit cards, brokerage accounts. It's actually a pretty wide net. And so this got the Bitcoin community fired up because A lot of people were saying, well, if that could happen in Canada, it could happen in the United States, it could happen anywhere. And so, your money's not safe, in the bank or in any type of financial institution and so on and so forth. And it did, bring up a lot of discussions around, can you, what do you do if you get financially canceled, Should you have all of your money in Bitcoin? Bitcoin's role in some of this too is that there was donations being made to a GoFundMe account. That account was frozen. Then there was another account. Then they were trying to do donations through Bitcoin. But, one of the problems with, sending it to a centralized point is that it has to be then distributed to the truckers, and so can ends up back in a bank account somehow, and so it's trackable. And so now they're going after all these folks and arresting people, and it's just been kind of a mess, really, to watch it. But I thought I'd take a step back. There was a really good thread on Twitter that I wanted to read that kind of talks a little bit about kind of the why again behind Bitcoin, and then I'll kind of go into the self-custody and the benefits. And there's another thread that Lynn Alden wrote that was really good, that kind of really outlines what the benefit is, from the standpoint of having the having your money sort of, somewhere where the state would have to prove that you've done something wrong and actually charge you with a crime in order to get you to, cough it up, versus just simply being able to flip a switch under suspicion or under some kind of administrative or bureaucratic process. So anyway, I'll get to that later. But the first one starts out with, this is the Blue Collar Bitcoin. It's a podcast I listen to, highly recommend it. I think they're on all the platforms. The Bitcoin protocol and network combines not one, not two, but three massive and groundbreaking discoveries in monetary technology. It is the convergence of these three discoveries that may very well make BTC the most powerful and impregnable asset in human history. Discovery number one, Bitcoin allows for near instant settlement via an inherently global and cyber monetary network. As economies of scale have grown exponentially, more global and digital, it seems all but assured value transfer in the third millennium will occur on the rails of the internet. Internet protocol suite ate virtually all information transfer. Another protocol will at some point subsume virtually all value transfer. Put simply, there's an almost 0% probability that in the year 2140, banks from around the world will be reaching final settlement in days to weeks via the SWIFT network, while using nearly 200 different fiat currencies, all with different exchange rates. The above will seem as anachronistic to our offspring as a horse and buggy feel to us today. Internet native technologies like Bitcoin will disintermediate cumbersome middlemen and expedite the transfer of value. It's going to happen, just a matter of when, how. At this stage in the game, we honestly feel the burden of proof is on the Bitcoin naysayers to explain how this won't be Bitcoin. The protocol supplies the infrastructure needed to onboard the entire global financial system. Bitcoin currently carries just shy of 1 trillion in market cap, but has the architecture to realistically subsume tens to hundreds of trillions with nobody in control, which leads us to the next discovery. Discovery number two, Bitcoin has no obvious soft spot, no centralized point of failure. We hear and use the word decentralized constantly, but we often fail to digest its profound implications. Prior to Bitcoin, all inherently digital monetary assets were centralized in nature. Satoshi broke this mold, and we are still digesting the implications. Bitcoin harnesses the power of encryption via a worldwide network of distinct actors, miners, nodes, hodlers, devs, etc., each with their own unique set of incentives. The global game theory is arguably unstoppable, and no other crypto asset comes close to Bitcoin in this respect. Discovery number three. As if being the world's first unstoppable venue for instant global digital decentralized value settlement wasn't enough, Bitcoin also happens to be the discovery of absolute scarcity. The free market selected gold over thousands of years due to its soundness and inflation resistance. As economies grew larger and more dispersed in the 20th century, gold succumbed to the advent of fiat currency due to its shortcomings of visibility and portability. Bitcoin one-ups gold scarcity via a mathematical algorithmic and immutable supply schedule. For the first time, mankind has discovered a monetary technology that's completely inelastic, totally unresponsive to increases in demand. As Saif Dean says, history shows it is not possible to insulate yourself from the consequences of others holding money that is harder than yours. And this is from the Bitcoin Standard. This discovery of scarcity in digital form is opportune given the macro backdrop of unprecedented debt levels and mathematically assured currency debasement and inflation. The timing is ripe for store value assets, particularly those with supreme liquidity. Bitcoin may be the best store value asset mankind has ever had at a time in the debt cycle when store value assets will be crucial to wealth preservation. Combine these three discoveries, Bitcoin is poised to function as the most saleable, secure, and anti-fragile asset in human history across both time and space. And this is huge. Act accordingly. So, that was a really good thread that kind of summarized, a lot of different, concepts and bringing them together. The scarcity, the final settlement, and then of course the natively digital aspect of Bitcoin. So all good stuff to remember, but I think once you start studying Bitcoin a bit more, you realize that it's a lot more nuanced and complex than oftentimes need a lot of different people to come at it from a different perspective and explain it in different ways, and you develop different levels of understanding, I think, as time goes on. So I'll jump to the Lynn Alden thread because it really speaks to why self-custody is important. I'll kind of go to that, and then I'll kind of take a step back and talk about what it is and sort of how you do it, how I've done it, and some of the benefits and downsides of self-custodying. So Lynn starts out, custodial financial services allow governments to freeze accounts first and then sort out who is guilty or innocent later. Self-custodial financial services force governments to actually charge people with a crime before they can use pressure to freeze their accounts. Custodial money often can't be withdrawn from a jurisdiction if, for whatever reason, rule of law breaks down there. Self-custodial money can be withdrawn from a jurisdiction if the individual is able to move their self elsewhere, and sometimes even if they can't. It's not a right or left issue because one merely needs to imagine their least favorite politician winning the next election or two or three elections from now. Most people are in favor of rule of law, but the questions are which law and in which order. Thus, Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies aren't really about avoiding the law, but rather about putting the onus on governments to act within the law and giving individuals more mobility options when governments begin to change the law in a way that trends away from liberty. And then someone asked a question about, is Fidelity Vanguard a custodial account? Is IRA a custodial bank accounts? What are some examples? And Lynn says, all of those are custodial accounts. If someone was a Canadian protester with those accounts, all of them are subject to being frozen, regardless of whether one was charged with doing a crime or not. So, bottom line is that this is then the rationale for self-custody is that it doesn't really protect you if you're doing something criminal, but if you're not doing anything wrong and haven't been charged with a crime, it's impossible for the government to freeze your Bitcoin wallet because it's decentralized and it's non-custodial. So, and if you didn't like the government, I mean, the best answer would be use, peaceful protest and use your voting ability and those of your neighbors to vote in better leadership, and then you can continue to exist in society and not have to be worried about getting financially canceled. But if that doesn't work and you want to move somewhere else, it's a lot easier to take your Bitcoin with you than it would be to take, all your, gold or silver or anything else like that. And definitely your custodial financial accounts would be just as difficult to move to another location, another country, another state, whatever. So what is self-custody? Well, basically it's exactly that. It's you hold the asset yourself. So an example of that might be, you have a stack of $100 bills in your drawer or in your safe at home. That's self-custody. That's kind of the original. Gold coins, silver coins that you hold in your physical form in your possession, those are self-custody. So the problem with self-custody for most assets is that how do you safeguard them? So if you've got gold coins, do you really want them in your house? You could put them in a safe. That's good, but then what if somebody breaks in and then makes you want to open the safe? So a lot of people like to store them, especially if you have a lot of gold or silver or whatever, you store it in a safe deposit box at a bank or you store it somewhere else. Well, now it's custodial. So that's kind of the dilemma that you have is, if you put it in a, bank or safe deposit box or with a third party, then you are relying on that third party to give you access to your coins or, and it could be your gold or silver, or it could be your Bitcoin wallet if that's where you store it. So it's just something to think about, how far do you want to go with that. Self-custody in general is that simple. And then with respect to Bitcoin, it's basically holding the coins and by holding the private key to that wallet. So when you open up an account on Coinbase and you buy Bitcoin, you have Bitcoin in your wallet online, they control those keys. You don't control those keys. And so that's a custodial wallet. But if you buy like a hardware wallet, for example, like I bought a Trezor hardware wallet, and so if I buy coins on Coinbase and I transfer them to the Trezor wallet, then now they're on the cold storage wallet, and they're not on the exchange. And the process of setting up that wallet, you have to create a private key, which is a, I think for me, it's like 25 random words. And then you have to write them down. You could memorize them too, and then you wouldn't have to write them down, but it's good to write them down and keep them someplace safe. And then there's a passcode that you use to enter the wallet, but if you forget the passcode or get locked out, you have to know the path, the private key or the group of words, and in what in the order too is very important. And if you lose that, your Bitcoin's gone forever because nobody can recover that. So, and that's one thing that really a lot of people don't like about self-custody too is, you know, well, what happens if I lose my private key? You know, well, don't lose it. So, but yeah, you would buy a hardware wallet. And again, there's several different brands out there. Ledger has been in the business a long time. Trezor, there's another one called Cold Card that a lot of people seem to like. So you can do research and, you know, kind of look online to see, you know, which one's more highly recommended. I've been pretty happy with the one that I have. And then what I do is I'll buy the Bitcoin and then I'll just transfer it to the hardware wallet periodically and just keep most of my Bitcoin on the hardware wallet. There's also, I think you can also download a self-custody wallet to your phone, and you can store your coins that way. But I kind of prefer the hardware wallet better. It just feels more secure and it's totally offline that way. Again, the setup's pretty straightforward. When I got my Trezor, I got there's this thing called a crypto tag that you can get, which is a stainless steel, two stainless steel slabs that have, and a punch, like a metal punch, that you can punch in codes that correlate to your private key words. So you kind of have like a code book that has all the words, and then whatever, you know, your first word is, so your first word is Satoshi. Well, you look up that word, and that word has a corresponding code associated with it in the book. So then you punch those spots on this stainless steel slab, and then when you're all done, you have kind of something that can't be destroyed. I mean, your house could burn down, and you'd still be able to pull that thing out of the ashes. So I think it's good to have a backup like that, and then I have another copy that I keep somewhere else too. So, but very important to keep your private key safe. And then just keep the coins you know, off the exchange and in your wallet. And you know, unless you give up your private key, really, you know, no matter what you've read or heard in the news, unless you give up your private key, no one can access your funds. You know, without your permission. So it's truly beyond the reach of the government. The downside, you know, of self-custody, you know, again, a lot of people don't like the responsibility, but as I like to say, with great power comes great responsibility in Bitcoin, but some people don't like that. So they may choose to buy their Bitcoin and hold it, you know, on an exchange. But I think that, you know, one of the greatest things about Bitcoin is the fact that you can hold it yourself on a non-custodial basis. So if you know, don't do that, then you're kind of missing out on one of the best features, I think, of Bitcoin. It's also hard to transact for services. You know, there isn't a lot of companies that accept Bitcoin, so, you know, if worse comes to worse and you have to flee your country and all you have is your Bitcoin, it is a little bit hard to you know, transact with day-to-day you know, things, or even if you're living in your country but all your accounts have been frozen except for your Bitcoin wallet, if you don't have, you know, places to buy gas and food and, you know, other things, that will take Bitcoin, it's kind of hard. So As a practical matter, being financially canceled in a modern society is just not where you want to be. But having Bitcoin is a definitely gives you peace of mind knowing that if bad stuff really goes down, that you at least have some of your wealth that's safe and portable. And we're not even talking about the price. I mean, a lot of people store value, they chuckle because well, look, it was $69,000 and now it's 39 or whatever. It's in the 30s now as of the date of this recording. The price is just something that you just have to get used to because it's volatile and it goes up and down a lot. But I always like to say zoom out and look at the long term. Bitcoin just continues to go up, and it's pretty simple. It's got a lot of utility. Once people realize what it's about and how useful it is. And then it has an absolutely hard cap, limited supply. There's really nothing else like it. I mean, even gold, they dig more out of the ground every year, so the supply of gold actually grows, but the supply and silver for that matter. And of course, fiat currency, that supply is unlimited. So, Bitcoin will continue to have that store value aspect. And then I just read a really interesting article today the writer is really talking about how Bitcoin is losing the narrative it's kind of being co-opted by Wall Street and into these ETFs that are futures and there's all these products that you can invest in that are Bitcoin-like the miners, there are the ETFs or whatever. And it really compares Bitcoin to art, which I thought was really deep because art, fine art, is rare, unique, one of a kind. It's very valuable, although it's very difficult to determine what that value is, but it does tend to go up over time. But the part of it that really got me was the fact that the art aspect of Bitcoin is really about the ethos of the Bitcoin community, which is entrepreneurial, libertarian, hardworking, all of these freedom, all of these qualities of the Bitcoiners that everyone strongly identifies with, and so anyway, it was just thinking about it as art and thinking of the community as really the that's really where the strength of Bitcoin is. It's not the coin itself, it's not the price, it's the community and how the community comes together and what the community is able to accomplish in terms of furthering financial inclusion, freedom, liberty, free markets, entrepreneurialism, all these things. So I just thought that was really deep. I hadn't really thought of it that way. I know that, I've felt since I've gotten involved in Bitcoin and gotten more involved in the community that, I felt like less concerned about the future, more at peace with, my financial situation, retirement, and all those things. Yeah, it's a blog called Epsilon Theory, It's EPSILONTHEORY.com if you're interested. Check it out. But I think they have a free subscription where you get two articles a month or something like that for free. And then if you like it, you can do a subscription. But I think it's $200 a year or something like that. But anyway, that just kind of blew my mind because I hadn't really put all that together. But it's, it is important for the Bitcoin community to keep the narrative and to stay focused on what it's about. And I think for the most part, people do, and not get caught up in the hype of institutional adoption and, the latest ETF or what Wall Street is spinning or any of that stuff, because really that in the big scheme of things, yeah, that's number go up and, we all want that, but that's probably in the long run less important than, the peaceful change that Bitcoin can help bring about in the world, especially with the kinds of government intervention in people's private lives that we've been seeing, and it's just it's everywhere. It's even in the quote unquote democratic countries. Like I never thought I'd see things that I've been seeing it happening in Australia or New Zealand or Canada even. And so it's very important, I think, for everybody to stay focused, centered, strong mind, strong body. These are going to be tough times coming up, but I think, with a good plan and focus, we can get through it, and there will be financial prosperity in the future. It's gonna be an interesting one. So with that, I will wrap it up. Thank you for listening. Appreciate any feedback, comments, or anything. Also, as a reminder, I'm not an investment advisor or licensed, so none of this is investment advice. It's just for entertainment, my opinions only. And I hope you've enjoyed it, and we will talk soon. Take care. Bye for now.